Hi, this is Ned Ryan, President of American Majority. Last week, I continued on the topic of fundraising, and whether you want to admit it or not, if you want to win, you're going to have to raise some money. I discussed raising money from individual donors in the previous podcasts, and the majority of your money will come from individual donors, regardless of what level of office you're running for, whether it's President of the United States or school board. But there are other sources, and I want to discuss those today. Another source of money for candidates is political action committees. Now, PACs are organizations that are created with a specific purpose of making contributions to political campaigns. PACs are usually issue-oriented. They have significantly higher limits on what they can contribute to a campaign. In congressional races, it's $5,000 for a primary election and $5,000 for the general election under current laws, but as with all things, they could be subject to change in the future. These PACs must report to the Federal Election Commission where their donations came from. Many industries and labor unions have PACs which serve as their influencing agent in federal elections. But if you're running for a state-level office, there are many state-based PACs that will give to state House and state Senate, governor and lieutenant governor races. There are even some that will give lower to lower levels of office, city council, county commission, maybe even school boards. Now, while politicians will often deny it, PACs are often used to gain influence and access in Washington and state capitals. PACs seek out candidates who vote favorably on their issues and reward them with donations every cycle. PACs tend to be skittish about giving money to challengers. They often fear that irritating incumbents and usually just don't want to give to unknown challengers in a particular race, unless the incumbent has been hostile to the PAC's issues. This sometimes raises the strategy issue of whether a particular challenger might be better off in foregoing PAC money. The general consensus is that this is a very difficult way to go. The simple fact of the matter is that most voters know little about PAC money, and those that do often do not care much one way or the other. Foregoing PAC money can, however, prove useful in some races. Take, for instance, Congressman Hostetler of Indiana. Because politicians can be perceived, real or imagined, that they have been bought by special interest PAC money, and because Hostetler's initial opponent in 1994 was an incumbent, Frank McCloskey, was one of the biggest recipients of labor-originated PAC money in the country, Hostetler decided early on that it would be to his advantage to make special interest PAC money an issue. Against all odds, he raised the money for his campaign entirely from individuals or for incumbent members of Congress. While Hostetler was successful with this approach, he's in the extreme minority in his position. And quite honestly, there are some in D.C. who feel that his approach was not the best and that every year the party had to come rescue him and bail him out with $1 million to provide funding for his campaign. Now, the simple fact of the matter is that raising PAC money is much easier than raising money from individuals. If money is going to be a problem in your campaign, think hard before giving up on PAC funds. Many good and honest conservative congressmen and state politicians take PAC money. But the rule of thumb is you must never compromise on your principles. Congressman Jim Ryan of Kansas has a very simple rule about PAC money. He's only going to take it from organizations who agree with what he is already doing. If a PAC wanted to give him money to influence a vote, Congressman Ryan made it very clear where he stood, and he also made it clear that he would not accept PAC money from tobacco, alcohol, or gambling interests. Now, another source of funding in campaigns is obviously from political parties. It was once clear that the national political parties could contribute substantially to congressional candidates. However, the campaign finance laws and regulations are changing rapidly. In 2002, the McCain-Feingold Campaign Finance Reform Law was signed into law and it changed dramatically the rules of the game. Designed to address the issue of soft money, i.e. corporate money or large personal money, hard money is the money given by individuals or by PAC action political action committees directly to candidates. For an individual, the sum allowed is limited to $2,300 in a primary and $2,300 in a general. For PACs, the sum is $5,000 in the primary and $5,000 in the general. Now, those figures are for congressional federal races. Depending on what state you're in, the levels might be different for state-level PACs and for individual contributions as well. Now, until 2002, individuals, labor unions, or corporations could give unlimited sums of money to a political party, 100,000, 500,000, etc. There was no limit. Though that money could not be given directly to candidates, the parties used soft money to help pay for critical voter registration campaigns, get out the vote drives, and the all-important issue ads for candidates. But McCain-Feingold changed all of that. Even after various challenges, even to the U.S. Supreme Court, by groups like the AFL-CIO and the National Rifle Association, the campaign laws are still in effect. Though many view these new campaign laws as unconstitutional and that they limit free speech, the laws have changed the way the national parties operate. Now, when I talk about soft money and corporate money, remember I'm talking about federal level. At the state level, it's a different game. For example, in Kansas, corporate money can go directly to a candidate. So be aware, if you're running for a state-level office, to look into the laws that govern your state in regards to money. They differ from state to state. Now, parties can still have coordinated expenditures and give direct contributions to candidates, but the money given to candidates must be hard money, i.e. money raised from small donors who are limited in what they can give. With the soft money, parties can still fund volunteer mail, slate cards, as well as voter registration drives and get out the vote work. But these expenditures must be party-focused and not candidate-specific, i.e. vote Republican, vote Democrat this fall, as compared to vote for candidate John Smith. In addition, the limits have changed. It's not unlimited how much soft money an entity can give to a political party. That money has now been limited. Now, if parties want to fund candidate-specific work, it must be paid for through hard money. And the limits now placed on national parties has done several things in recent years. It has caused the parties to start very aggressive small donor fundraising efforts, i.e. direct mail and prospecting, and caused the usual get-out-the-vote work to be curtailed in some ways. I hope these podcasts on fundraising will have helped give you a better idea of how to put together a fundraising plan, realizing where the money is in politics, and then once you've figured out what your fundraising plan is and how much money your campaign needs, that you will start being aggressive in your fundraising and getting donations for what will hopefully be your successful campaign.